coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, the 25th day of October 2021. What's wrong with me? I can't even get the year right, right? Don't even know time, place, or space, right? That would apply to Mr. Marbles or Shuffles, Joe Biden, as we've seen in recent days, of course. So anyway, a lot of things to get into today. I want to welcome everyone to this program. It's just been a really busy weekend for us here at the studio. I'm not going to go into detail, but we'll just say that, don't think because we lost a man of God, a warrior, things have stopped. They haven't. And as I said, talking about, backing down? No, we don't back down. We double down. That message will be met by the appropriate people, or the people that that message is intended for. They know. All right. A lot of things to get into. Obviously, we've got a lot of COVIDiots. The fact that the Biden regime is actually considering. Listen to this, education and counseling for those who have rejected the jab, the clot shot, the juice, right? Especially the police departments should tell you everything you need to know. You know, this regime believes that you and I can't do our own research, or the left believe that any research we do is done well, in the bathroom on an iPhone or some sort of tablet. And, it's Facebook and social media research. They don't believe that we can actually go to government websites and read documents or talk to medical professionals. There are a lot of them out there who understand what is taking place, and none of this is about health. John Moore is my guest. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. And make sure you tune into his radio show. He's got a fantastic radio show Monday through Friday and does a great job, has marvelous guests. Thelibertyman.com. There it is right there on your screen. If you're watching this at home, there it is. And you can actually drill down. You can listen to the current program or drill down for the archive programs. There's it's a wealth of information there. And if you scroll down on the website at thelibertyman.com, you can also find a lot of great news, informational articles about a number of topics, as well as supporting, John, by way of his products and such, and then the, items that he has on his website. So go to thelibertyman.com and bookmark thelibertyman.com. All right. One of the things, in addition to everything else. Oh, but by the way, I had a meeting with Galileo.com, and folks, please, communications are going to be so important as we go down the road and as we continue to progress into this tyrannical Orwellian dystopian future. So what I'd like you to do is consider the purchase of a satellite phone. Please do that. You get the phone, if you go to the satellite phone store, and the link is in the episode description as well as on our website, HagmanReport.com. You get a satellite phone and sign up for Galileo. All right. There are two separate things. A, you purchase the cell phone, or actually the cell phone plan. You get the latest generation of the sat phone free, but you pay for the plan. And then you go to Galileo.com and click on the link, and there it is, as you see it right there on your screen. And you can get alerts from people like Steve Quayle, myself, and many others, too numerous to mention, but many of the influencers or all, and I don't like that word necessarily. Many of the people who are plugged into what's going on use this service as an alert kind of information propelling device or mechanism. I had a meeting with the folks at Galileo, and I made a mistake. I was sending out alerts to the wrong platform. All right. So they were not being initially, they were not, I fixed that Friday night. Okay. But it was an operator error on my end. So sign up, get your phone, sign up for Galileo and pick out the influencers or the information assets that you want to listen to or you want to have alerts from. Galileo, note the spelling is different. Link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. But do that today because communications are tenuous at best. All right, speaking of communications, I'm going to take you to a story that broke this morning and is continuing to break. This is so important, and John Moore is going to I want to address this at the top and then hit some other news and then get into this more in depth with John because – one of the things that we've seen is, you remember, for example, the plot, and I use that in air quotes, to kidnap Governor Whitmer, right? You remember that, right? And you remember, of course, the January 6th Capitol. This word is not correct. Insurrection, right? You remember that. Well, about that. Let's talk about both the insurrection, which is not an insurrection. That's not what an insurrection looks like. And the plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer by right-wing, right? Right-wing crazies, gun-toting right-wing Christian conservative crazies or cult followers of Donald Trump or Q-tards. Look, whatever the left calls this, it's not that. It's not that. But students of FBI history ought to know or ought to quickly absorb the lesson that infiltration or the infiltrating federal agents are like cockroaches. Whenever you spot one, whenever you find one, whenever you see one in your organization, in your group, in your party, it is an absolute guarantee that there are dozens of others nearby. Feds never, ever, ever, ever operate alone. And I can tell you this by personal experience back in the day, okay? They never operate by themselves. And this is how you end up with at least 12, count them, 12 FBI informants in a tiny right-wing militia plot from October of 2020. That's just informants, by the way, not even agents. 12 FBI informants, 15 informants in the right-wing 2016 Malheur plot, dozens in the 2014 Bundy Ranch affair, including 6 FBI undercover agents posing as fake documentarians shooting a fake documentary, and the list goes on. Here's the lesson from this, because there are militia groups out there. I want you to listen. There are patriotic groups with good intent, legal, lawful intent. There are websites, forums with honorable constitutionally legal intent who want to see this country survive. And you have this internal capture by these federal provocateurs who hijack the mission. And this is exactly what happened on January 6th. And we're going to be getting into that a lot more here coming up. But I want you to understand, if you have a group of people and somebody says, hey, let's go break that window or let's do whatever the unlawful or malicious act is, whatever follows that. Let's go, and whatever follows that, if it is illegal to the extent that it shouldn't be done, if it's ill-advisable, then you're probably looking at either a Fed in terms of an agent, an operational asset or an informational asset? How can you say that, Doug? You're just a mope sitting behind a mic. Folks, I was an informational and operational asset for the FBI. I served that role. Have the baseball cap to prove it. But it was different back then. I wasn't going after patriots. But I digress. So this and more, and let's start out, Eric the Tech. Good morning, by the way. How was your weekend before we bring John on? How was your weekend? Yeah. Yeah. It was good. Played dad and husband all weekend, right?
Oh, yeah.
And also, I have to say this, also backed us up here this weekend very well. Appreciate that. Let's get a clip one coming out of the gate. Before we took to the air, John Moore was saying, you know, this, what we're seeing with this SARS-CoV-2. And by the way, one of my alerts was saying that Fauci's going to have a very bad week this week. And that was before the news about the Beagles made headlines. It gets even worse than that, folks. But anyway, none of this is about health. This SARS-CoV-2 is, none of this is about health. It's about bioweapons development. Yes. It's about control of the population of the planet and depopulation of the planet. And by the way, when I mentioned about the left saying, you do research in the bathroom on your iPhone. Okay, hold on a second. Since when, and let me ask this question up front, since when does some mope, just because he's got a gazillion or $1 billion, he's a billionaire, who created Microsoft, the software for Microsoft, or Facebook, that doesn't have an MD after his name, has no medical degree. Since when is that mope smarter, shall I say, than you or I? What? Because he's got money? Because he created a software program? Because he's head of Facebook? Because he's head of Microsoft? When did he get his doctor degree, his doctor of medicine degree? And you're listening to morons like that? Just because they got money? Let's go to clip one, and it's a 50-second clip. This should speak to every one of us. This is going to happen globally. This is going to happen globally. The mechanism is SARS-CoV-2, and then we'll bring John on. Go ahead and play clip one.
What about your hotel, your quarantine facility that you announced that will be built, I think, in the middle of next year? Do you still need that?
I think regional quarantine facilities are going to be needed into the future. We can't predict what's going to happen, but there may be a country that's declared a red spot or a no-go zone area, and we may need to bring back people from those different countries, and they'll need to be charted in. It's no different to what we saw, what we have seen during this pandemic. We'll also need it for unvaccinated people.
Quarantine facility that you announced that will be built, I think, in the middle of next year. Do you still need that?
I think regional quarantine facilities are going to be needed into the future. We'll also need it for unvaccinated people.
Did you get that? Well, we're going to also need it for unvaccinated people. But the trains, they're still running on time. You know the impact of that statement if you are a student of history. But the trains still run on time. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. As I like to say, the man, the myth, the legend, John Moore, from the show me state, right? From the plains of, Missouri. The Ozarks, actually, not the plains.
The plains are about 200 miles north of me, north of the Missouri River, Doug. No, there's no plains down here. If you can see 300 yards in one direction, you're really doing good down here. Thank you. Good to be here.
I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate you, your patience with my open there, a couple of pieces of business and, kind of setting the stage for the show. So we've got a couple of things going on. We got more than a couple of things. I kind of laid this show out, the COVIDiots, the people who are just absolutely mind numbed by this, by this virus. Look, it's a bioweapon. We get that. We get that. Okay. But it's a tweaked SARS bioweapon. But the other bioweapon is the jab that they call a vaccine that really is, in my view, it is an AIDS delivery system. And people say, look at me and say, AIDS? What are you talking about? Well, what is AIDS? It's acquired immunodeficiency. So.
Right.
That's
because people associate AIDS with homosexual right. sexual activity. That's from the mid-80s, of course. It's been more than a year that we first started hearing. It was actually the mid to late spring of 2020, started hearing about AIDS being part of what was going on with COVID-19. At the time, I personally thought it was a way to make it more transmissible, which of course it does. But it turns out the real goal is to have people's immune systems destroyed. And that's what's going on. Best I can tell, Doug, every month after you get the clot shot, your immune system is reduced by 5%. And of course, you go from 100% to 95%. The next 5% is what's left, not another 5%. So it gets incrementally larger. It's like compound interest. The third 5% is larger. The next 5% is a larger percentage of what's left. Point being, by March of 2022, which is what, about 7-8 months, something like that, most people who've had the clot shot will no longer have an immune. Yeah. How many months?
Five
months.
Yeah, roughly five. And we'll be
pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah.
That time will pass quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So point being, by March of this coming year, 5 months away, almost everybody who's had the clot shot, one or two boosters, will no longer have an immune system in the normal sense of the word. What killed people with AIDS was that their immune system could no longer fight off routine viruses and bacteria that we were exposed to every day of the week. Unless you're living in a very sterile laboratory environment, every human being is exposed to viruses and bacteria all the time. That's just part of living. And the people who got the AIDS, they could not survive because routine illnesses just flat killed them. And that's what we're looking at for. It's hard to tell what the percentages are, Doug, anywhere from maybe one third of our population to maybe two thirds. There's no way to trust any numbers coming from the government as to how many people got the clot shot. Regardless, it's a substantial percentage of our population that within 5 to 12 months will be either really sick or dead. Of course, now they want to have the clot shots approved for children, I think 5 to 11, and 48 million more vaccines are prepared for those children. We're in an absolute nightmare here. As I said off air before we started, Doug, there's no incident in recorded human history, at least 6,000 plus years, of something of this nature happening worldwide.
And this was pointed out, and I'm glad you said this, because this was pointed out in a 2-minute audio or a 2-minute video clip, Dr. Mercola, who you have referenced numerous times. I want to play this and then, get your comments afterwards. But what you just said there, people have to understand, in my view, they've got to understand what we are up against. This has never happened in human history. When is the last time, anyone has ever seen this? But let's go ahead and play, if you don't mind, John, let's go ahead and play clip 5. And I want your take on this after this. You've probably seen this, and folks, you may have seen this. If not, please listen and take heed to what Dr. McCall is going to say. Go ahead.
What happened? Well, we now know that this early safety warning in this peer-reviewed publication from Jessica Rose clearly failed. Look how high those mortality numbers were by April. It clearly failed. We had Americans dying after vaccination. It was obvious. This is an obvious data signal. This is obvious. All experts agree it's obvious. Now, as of September 24th, it's raced up to 15,937 Americans have died. Over 250,000 Americans, after the vaccine, have been hospitalized, gone to their urgent care or office visits. You can see the temporal relationship on the bottom bar graph. You can see that sharp spike upwards. Sadly, we have over 20,000 Americans that the CDC tells us are permanently disabled after the vaccine. That's bigger than some major cancer groups. The disability that we are going to see due to these vaccines will go down in history as an unbelievable atrocity. I made a presentation to the Heritage Foundation in Washington that provides a lot of oversight to the House and the Senate as well as the agencies. And I made this presentation. You could hear a pin drop when I was done. Pin drop. And finally, one of the former presidents of the American Medical Association said, Dr. McCullough, we have the biggest biological catastrophe on our hands in human history with a medicinal product, and we've had two administrations buy into it. We've had all the houses of legislation buy into it. We have the entire medical establishment buy into it, and the whole media, and no one knows how to stop it. No one knows how to stop this freight train, and we're all witnessing it right now.
There it is. John, you said it at the beginning. This is a medical doctor, well-researched. This is the Satan's jab, if you will. This is the World Economic Forum jab. And you said it before we went on air. You said, look, this is all going to change. I mean, this is changing everything. So it's kind of like the Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution, right? Or the synthesis and antithesis. This is kind of the fingerprint, if you will, the forensic fingerprint of the globalists. And it's interesting. He says, no one knows how to stop this freight train. Yeah, I do. Just say friggin' no. No and hell no.
If I was a governor of the state of Missouri, I would bring in the commander of the National Guard from Missouri, the head of the Missouri Highway Patrol, and I say, gentlemen, by the end of the day, I want all COVID vaccines in the state of Missouri seized and brought to Jefferson City, where they can be destroyed. Jefferson City is the capital of Missouri, by the way. That would be the order that I would give if I was governor of the state of Missouri to stop people from dying from these shots. That's how serious this is, Doug. And it's getting worse. As I mentioned a moment ago, they're on the cusp of approving these deadly shots for children 5 to 11 years old. They already approved for, I believe, 12 years old. I may be wrong on some of these numbers. I believe they already approved for 12 years old and older. And it's a clear and present danger. It could not be more clear and present than what's going on. I recall the swine flu vaccine back in the 70s. My first wife was a registered nurse. I was pretty well convinced by the mass media, the newspapers and TV at the time, that would be a dandy thing to do, to get the swine flu shot. My wife, the registered nurse, she said, John, you really don't want to do that. So I didn't do it. Even today, I personally know people who are still disabled from the swine flu shot that they received more than 40 years ago. Now, I believe it was less than 24 people died from the swine flu vaccine when it was shut down nationwide, Doug. We've surpassed that number by a factor of more than 100, way more than 100% more. Exactly. 1,000% more is what I meant to say. 100% would only be 48 people. 1,000% more.
And the VAERS system, obviously, it's a voluntary reporting system, and there's an aversion to reporting. So you've got anywhere between, I've seen estimates range from 1% to 10 to 100% underreported on the VAERS system. So there's that, right? I mean, so, you've got an incredibly large number of people who are suffering, and you can go to you can see videos, especially on the the unwashed platforms, all right? the platforms for the unwashed masses. You can see children, young people with myocarditis, with neurological disorders, filmed from their hospital, or filmed in their hospital beds and from their hospital beds. It is a genocide, in my view, a depopulation agenda. And John, let me ask you a question. Who can't see this? And who in the hell says, well, you know?
Well, Doug, most people don't live in the world you and I and our listeners live in. We need to lay a foundation here.
Go for it.
There's been an agenda for decades, beginning in the 1930s. With the Dick and Jane readers to convert youngsters from learning to read and write the English language using the method that's always been used, which is phonics. By the late 50s, early 60s, all the teachers that knew how to teach phonics were retired. The teachers from that point forward only knew how to teach the sight method, which is the Dick and Jane readers. The highest SAT scores ever recorded, Doug, was the year I graduated from high school, 1966. They've gone down ever since. They've been changed three times to artificially make it look like they were higher, because it's so humiliating and embarrassing nationwide to have the SAT scores continue to go down. But the foundation of all learning, doesn't matter if you want to be a really great custodian or a nuclear physicist, the foundation of all learning is two things: language skills and mathematics. I mentioned a custodian because some of the chemicals these custodians get these days have 18-page warnings of how dangerous these things are and how to use them. They're so toxic and deadly. But when you take away the ability to learn the English language, which began in the 1930s, you're gradually, incrementally dumbing down the public. That's by design. Now, you can believe one of two things, Doug, that the men and women who had PhDs in English and education in the 1930s, you can believe they knew exactly what they would do and precisely the outcome they would get by changing the way we teach language to American children. Or you can believe that the men and women with PhDs in the 1930s who changed the way, which works quite well, by the way, teaching phonics, or you can believe they didn't have a clue what they were doing. There's no in-between. That doesn't exist. Now, that's 80 years ago. Now, where are we now? I'll use my son-in-law as an example. Great guy. He's a professional salesman. Every employment he's had in sales, he nationwide companies, he rises to the top nationwide. Great father, great husband. And he says, John, if I'm going to read something, I have to have the door shut, complete quiet, and focus on nothing but what I'm reading. And it's not fun, and it's not easy. This is a young man who's in his late 40s. Now, it was so embarrassing nationwide that children could no longer read that there was a nationwide program that began in the private sector called Hooked on Phonics. It became immediately a nationwide seller, bestseller, of that type of educational program, because parents want their children to be successful. And many adults, maybe most adults, know that having good language skills is the key to success. It is the key, along with mathematics. Now, that nationwide success of Hooked on Phonics caused so much humiliation and embarrassment in the public schools that they once again began teaching phonics, which they hadn't done for decades. Kind of, sort of. One of the local school districts here in my neighborhood, they don't start teaching phonics till the sixth grade. Too late.
Too late, indeed.
The child's language skills are already broken. Go ahead, Doug.
Let me just stop you right there. If you're a mom out there of a child, and this is something I've got personal experience with, the most important, in my view, obviously, as a mom, in the instructional phase of your child, I ask, I beg, I plead with you, as early as 6 months, read to your child, read, make, you know, have them, not make them, but have them enjoy the process of reading, understanding language, not this Valley Girl kind of talk like, you know, no, please take the time. John, you're right, because at that level, it is too late.
Let's get back to your question, Doug.
Go ahead.
We can go segue back and forth, but your question is basically, how do Americans let this happen?
Yes.
How does it happen? Now, newspaper sales are at all-time low. Newspapers are closing nationwide, people get most of their news from one or two sources, either television news or radio news or, of course, the internet. I dated a young woman back in the 70s, and she came from a blue-collar family in a small town, and she says, John, you watch the evening television news. That means you're an intellectual. I looked at her. I didn't say anything adverse to what she said. I just thought to myself, that's a pretty low standard for being an intellectual. And of course, at the time, I was reading the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and other publications.
And listening to Huntley and Brinkley and, Walter Cronkite.
But,
Eric Severide. Remember those people? Go on.
Yeah. Walter Cronkite, of course, the most trusted man in America.
Yeah.
But for a blue-collar working-class girl, a man or a woman who watched the evening TV news was an intellectual. Now, that's a pretty low standard for being an intellectual. That's a very low standard because, once again, most Americans don't even do that.
You know,
unfortunately, they don't.
And that's, you know, people might say, well, you know, what does that anecdote have to do with anything? But that's a great, in my view, that's a great example of where we were.
I'll give another example.
All right.
To help clarify this. Very dear friend of mine. He was, he's a veteran, honorably discharged veteran, U.S. Air Force. Next point, very important, graduate of a brick and mortar 4-year college, not some online course, but he actually was physically in and graduated from a 4-year university. He's been a successful business owner, meeting a payroll of, 6 to 8 people every week for years in his chosen career. He published a book that is focused on his chosen career. So he's smart, he's educated, he's successful in his chosen career, a husband, a father, probably now a grandfather. Now, with that as a foundation, my friend did not know, Doug, that there was a difference between a United States senator and a state senator, a United States congressman and a state representative.
Right.
Now, that's with that as a background, what does that say for the rest of the teeming masses out there? I love Mark Dice. You've seen Mark Dice.
Yeah.
On the beach in Los Angeles on the 4th of July with a microphone asking people on the 4th of July, what are we celebrating today?
Our independence from Canada.
And one of the few people who could answer properly was a guy from Canada.
And isn't that something, you know, where you've got foreigners that actually know more about American history than Americans? It's a sad commentary.
And I've said this before, but it's so much fun. You'll probably remember Marcus Welby, MD.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Massively. I mean, in that time slot, back then we didn't have cable TV. There was basically 3 networks, and that was it. It was like going up against Bonanza. You don't go up against Bonanza in that time slot back then. And you didn't go up against Marcus Welby, MD, or The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
That's right. When, by the way.
Robert Young.
Yeah, Robert. Yeah, but I want to say this. I'm a big fan of Johnny Carson, especially during the late 60s, early 70s, the comedy and the interview skills. If you watch it, you can learn a lot. Go ahead about Robert Young, Marcus
Robert
Welby.
Young was an actor. I think he's probably passed on, but
yes.
Robert Young was an actor that once a week pretended to be a medical doctor.
Yeah.
That was his job, and he was very good at his job. Robert Young, the actor, pretending to be a doctor, got 200 to 300 letters a week from people who were literate, asking for medical advice.
Yep.
The same people that are voting in our elections, Doug.
Yeah, which
Now, if that's not scary, I don't know what is.
You know, John.
Keeping in mind that almost half the people in this country can't write a letter because they're illiterate.
And you know what's interesting? I'm going to take a segue here, too. I wrote, and look, my handwriting is not the best, all right? So I actually
mine's worse than yours, I assure you.
Well, Eric, I hand Eric a note, and he says, you know, what language is this? What is this, hieroglyphics? Whatever. Anyway, so I took my time. I wrote, actually, I had to write just a request. So I took my time. I wrote it in cursive. It was like two sentences. And the true story. And the Saturday morning, I handed it to a teller at a bank, a young, very young teller. And she looked at it, and she said, I can't read this. And I thought, no, look, my handwriting is not bad at all in this. She said, I can't read it. It's cursive. I can't read cursive. And a true story. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. You're in a bank? It just blew my mind. We're there. I mean, are you serious? You can't. So the Constitution is, you can't read the Constitution, you know, in its original format, obviously. So, I mean, John, what the heck? We lost. Oh, ding, ding, ding in my ear. We lost them. So, but folks, you get the idea, right? What John is talking about, look, and Gary Haven was on, just a wonderful philanthropist, an absolutely great man. Folks, if you don't know who Gary Haven is, let me know when he's back on. He was on not too long ago, and he was talking about mass psychosis. All of this has to play into where we're at today. But let me just tell you, I'll kind of cut to the bottom line here as to where we are today. I would submit to you where we are today is because we have removed God from everything, our society. We are getting what we deserve. Whether it be this mass psychosis that includes, again, back in the 70s, thinking Robert Young is a medical doctor, whether it's the lack of proper education. We have taken God out of the schools. We have taken God out of the family home in many cases. We've taken God out of our society, our court systems. Okay, John is back. I'm glad he's back. I don't know. We lost you. We pressed a button.
I'm back.
I'm detonation. Back. All right. There you go. Go ahead, sir.
I lived for a couple of decades in a suburban community of St. Louis, kind of an upscale middle-class place called Kirkwood, Missouri. The Kirkwood City Hall has all these signs posted around there to give you directions to the city clerk, the city court, the mayor's office. And so these little signs, these little plastic signs, have the English word, and then below that they have it in Braille, and including how to get to traffic court in Braille, by the way. Doug.
I'm processing that. Okay.
Directions to get to traffic court in Braille.
That makes sense. Special? Yeah, makes sense, right?
It makes a lot of sense.
It's kind of like Braille stop signs.
About the same thing.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I'll get that. If it's Ricky, ask her what's for dinner. Okay.
I'm going to unplug this thing. Hold on.
All right. You go ahead and do that. All right, John Moore is my guest, obviously every Monday, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. But, you know, look, folks, it's we're there. I had to do that. By the way, I forget to do that all kinds of times on this platform. But so, you know, John, none of this, I mean, we're here. This is destruction by design. This is a takedown of our country by design.
Well, let's go back a little bit to a few minutes ago.
All right.
When I mentioned the 1930s, what was going on in the 1930s? We had Franklin Delano Roosevelt implementing many of the extremely harmful programs that are basically destroying the country right now. Now, prior to Franklin Roosevelt, here's what welfare was in 3,300-plus counties in the United States. It was a county farm. If you were hungry, if you needed a place to sleep, you went to the county farm. It was not, it was a sanitary, healthy, clean place to live. Nothing luxurious about it. Simple. You had, you got three meals a day, a sanitary, clean, safe place to sleep. And you worked. You worked, you milked the cows. You, helped raise the corn and the tomatoes, took care of the chickens, horses, whatever was there. That was welfare in the before Franklin Roosevelt. There was no such thing as federal welfare before that. It was a system that worked. And being at the county farm was not a matter of pride for most people. It was a matter of humiliation for most people. And most people went there because they had no choice. They were hungry. They were destitute. They needed a place to stay and a place to get some food. All the county farms nationwide shut down during the Great Depression because federal money was coming in, and the county said, oh, well, now there's federal welfare money coming in. We don't need to have this county farm anymore, so they shut them down nationwide. That began a dependence that we're now into the fourth and fifth generation of Americans, families who've never had a job. That's one of the problems and it's not just, it's all parts of our culture, white, black, not so much Asian, but Latino to a certain extent. Generational poverty, where children grow up never knowing personally a blood relative who's ever had a job. That's simply not the world they live in.
And they're okay with that, aren't they? I mean...
It's their world. It's all they know.
Here's why I say that, because I'm going to go personal here real quick. When I was, I was in the first grade, so I don't know how it was, 6, 7 years old. My dad was out of work because of a strike where he was a blue collar factory worker, and my mom didn't work. She was busy raising me. And I remember this so clearly. All right. We didn't have any food in the house. I mean, it was one of those times where, God bless my father because he got another job, and he was waiting on the checks and stuff. So at some point, and I don't know how this happened, but my folks got food stamps. It was just, and the embarrassment by my parents, they were so embarrassed. As a matter of fact, they were so embarrassed. They enlisted me. They said, look, would you go down to the grocery store? And I walked down to the grocery store. Take these. This is like money. And I want you to buy like 5 cans of cream corn and a loaf of bread with this. And you bring it back. That's going to be your supper. All right. I did that 2 or 3 different times. And the embarrassment that they had by using these food stamps, which looked like food. In other words, you could tell it wasn't money. It wasn't back then. It wasn't a credit card. It was paper from the government. And they were so embarrassed, John. And you know, I didn't know any better. I guess I knew that there was some stigma, but I didn't know any better. But today there's no shame anymore. There's no shame in not being self-sufficient. And I'm not saying my folks weren't self. I'm just saying at that time it was only. And by the way, it was only a month that we had that situation. But I remember being hungry, and I don't think I've ever told that story before. But I remember my mom crying and saying, we can't do this. This is not us. And my dad, working just all the time. And believe me, we didn't have. I wasn't raised, with a silver spoon in my mouth, but folks, there's no shame in this anymore, is there, John?
I think a good adjective to describe where our society is going is we're drifting towards barbarity. We're drifting towards being uncivilized. I'm a bit older than you, Doug.
No, you're a lot older than me.
Well, maybe a lot.
I'm
don't.
Kidding.
I mean, whatever.
I'm kidding.
But
I looked. I was telling you. I looked in the mirror after a shower, and I'm thinking, who's that guy? Yeah, who's that guy? When did that guy get so old? Anyway.
Block off the shower from the shoulders down, Doug. I mean, the mirror, well, I meant to say. Block off the mirror from the shoulders down.
I'm good there, okay, but.
Okay.
Be quiet, Eric the Tech. He's over there. Yeah, never mind. Go ahead.
Well, I have recollection of going back to about 3 years old of the adults in my life, my grandparents, my parents. My mother would not go shopping unless she was wearing a dress, gloves, and a hat. For grocery shopping. I'm talking grocery shopping. 52, 53, 54. By the late 50s, she was starting to segue into wearing pedal pushers and more casual dress to go grocery shopping. I went to a country high school. My graduating class was 100 students. I had fellow students that earned their spending money by running trap lines to trap fur-bearing animals that they would butcher and take the pelts to earn their spending money. I had another fellow classmate. He worked on a dairy farm with his parents. Despite being in the country like that, all the male teachers were required to wear a dress shirt and a tie, even the football coach and the shop teacher, and all the female teachers were required to wear a dress. If a female teacher showed up wearing a pantsuit or something of that nature, she'd be sent home and probably disciplined, if not discharged. The young men, almost all of us, always wore a shirt with a collar, almost all the time. All the female students were required to wear a dress. Unless it was 10 degrees and a foot of snow, then they could wear the pants to school, but they had to change back into a dress before class started. Now, that was standards that were for a little country high school in Missouri. That today, I can fast forward, more recently, I had an investigative assignment to go to a large suburban school, high school, at noontime on a Tuesday. So I show up at noon, I meet with the administrator that I have business with, and I notice about 20 young people. They were obviously not high school students, but young people in their 30s, maybe 40s, that looked like they just left the homeless shelter from their attire. And I asked the administrator, who are those folks? Are they visiting the school? Oh, no, John, those are the faculty. And they look like their attire was purchased at the local Goodwill store, if not given to them at the homeless shelter. And I noticed all these students were leaving the campus at noon on a Tuesday. And I said, how come everybody's leaving? Oh, John, we let out school on noon every Tuesday for the rest of the day, every week, so the teachers can have meetings. Doug, that's 10% of the school year gone. 10% of the classroom time gone. And they wonder why the test scores are going down when you eliminate 10% of the school year. I use these examples to amplify your questions, Doug. Your question is so foundational, so important. How did this happen? There was a tipping point. I recall a junior high school chemistry class where we had two clear liquids. And we had a clear liquid in a beaker and a clear liquid in this long glass tube with a little spigot on the bottom that was so sensitive you could count drops. And all the students had the same experiment. And we had to count the drops that went into the bottom beaker until the bottom beaker clear liquid from the top beaker clear liquid turned blue, instantly turned blue. It was called titration, I believe it was called. Yep. And I always remember that experiment. One more drop. One more drop, it's still clear. One more drop, it's still clear. One more drop, and the entire beaker turns blue. That's what's happened with our society, Doug. We've got that one last drop, and our whole society is collapsing around our ears. A friend of mine was running a bowling center, and he had female employees show up for work wearing pajama bottoms. I'm serious. Wearing pajama bottoms for their attire to work at work in a bowling center. It's bad enough when young men and women go in public wearing pajama bottoms, but to show up at your place of employment wearing pajama bottoms, that's acceptable? What's next, Doug? I mean, how much lower can we go? If wearing pajama bottoms to your place of employment is acceptable, when you're dealing with the public, it's not like this person is an IT person by themselves in some cubicle, nobody ever sees them. But she was waiting on the waiting tables and serving food at this bowling center in a small city in Missouri. We're witnessing the collapse of our society, Doug. That's what's going on around us. The acceptance of the COVID-19 clot shots is just another part of this. People are voluntarily committing suicide because they not only do they not read, they can't read. That's what's going on. Now they can't read even if they wanted to. Reading a lengthy, complex article in the English language, what they were born into, they simply can't do it even if they wanted to, Doug. That's where we are.
Yeah. Sadly, yes. And I want to drive that point home, I'm going to send this to Eric the Tech right now. This is like a 15 second, I don't even know how to describe this, folks, for those listening. But John, you know, to what you said, as I'm doing this by my own, okay. To what you said, you know, this, to me, this, let me know if you got it, Eric the Tech. To me, John, this is all about respecting your person, right? Respecting yourself. Self-respect. It's about valuing yourself as a human, as a God, someone created by God, in my view. And there's so much lack. It lacks right now. Where we see people disrespecting, and I don't like to use that word as a verb, but being disrespectful of themselves, of God's creation, whether it's, you know, a piercing through your nose or your lips or your, you know, through your head.
I need to step in here.
Go ahead. So you're going to take me to task on that or what?
No. It's we need to have some humor here. We really do. My friend Professor McCanny, he is genuinely a friend. We've met person to person a number of times. Professor McCanny taught astrophysics at Cornell University. He taught mathematics at Cornell University. He's the author of 12 books. And he's an advanced amateur archaeologist. He's finally deciphered what the hell all those drawings in the desert mean down there in Peru, the Nazca lines. Anyway, I said, we're live on the air, he and I, doing our Wednesday show. I said, Jim, when you and I were boys, we had National Geographic, and we learned how to tell by looking at National Geographic who the primitive Stone Age people were who had no written language and could not count past their fingers and toes. Because the photographs in National Geographic told us they were covered with tattoos and had pieces of metal sticking out of their face. That's how we instantly were able to identify the Stone Age primitive people who had no knowledge of any written language. And he laughed the strongest belly laugh I've ever heard the man laugh. Because where are we now, Doug? We have Americans with tattoos all over them and pieces of metal sticking out of their face, which people my age and your age know from reading National Geographic, that's how to instantly identify Stone Age people who have no written language and can't count past their fingers and toes.
You know, it's sad. I mean,
Or am I wrong, Doug?
No, you know, sadly, you're not wrong. And I would say it's humorous, except it's not. You know,
60 years ago, the only people on this planet with pieces of metal sticking out of their face and tattoos all over them were Stone Age people who had no written language and no knowledge of mathematics. That's the only people on this planet 60 years ago who had that persona and looked like that.
Or they were impaled by a 56 Dodge or a Studebaker or something like that. No, I mean, check this out, because this is how far, it's only a few seconds, but folks understand this. And I do this for entertainment only. And think. I want people at home to think. If you are the father or mother, or the sister or brother of this, these. But go ahead. Just take a look at this, John. This is where we're at today.
Hi, my name's Jasper. I use they pronouns.
Hi, my name is Liana. I use they demon pronouns.
This video is how to use our pronouns.
So we're going to basically present three sentences. One of them is going to have one pronoun, the other one's going to have the other pronoun, and then the last one is going to have both pronouns interchanged.
So Liana uses they, them pronouns and demon pronouns. So the first sentence would be, Liana is my partner, they are cute, and I am theirs. I love them very much, and I hope they love themselves too. For the demon pronouns, it would be, Liana is my partner, Deem is cute, and I belong to Deem. I love Demon very much, and I hope Deem loves Demon's self too. Then interchanging the two.
Okay, you can stop it. I mean, you get the idea. Demon pronouns, right? John, I mean, do they need a spanking? Discipline?
They're hopeless. They need a wake-up call. They need a wake-up call to reality. I was visiting with a couple of friends yesterday. They have two adult children, and they're both in their mid to late 20s. Young woman, daughter, 27 years old. The mother told me, she says, John, my daughter can't find a real man to date. And I've heard this from young women themselves and from their parents, that women, they want a man who is manly. They want an alpha male man who will protect them and care for them in a way that manly men have done for tens of thousands of years. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for a mate that would make a good husband and a good father role. And these young women, they can't find that man. That man in their own age group almost is non-existent. Now, out here where I live, we have miners and cattlemen, ranchers, men who work in the forest. These are smart, tough men that still have all the attributes that men have traditionally had. But they're a definite minority, Doug, a definite minority. These young men growing up in these urban, suburban areas, which is where most young men grow up, good luck. My daughter up in Metro Seattle has done an excellent job of raising two alpha male young men, one who's now he's 26. He supervises 100 man construction crew, and the other young man, he's a sophomore in high school, a great athlete, and obviously becoming an alpha male. I won't say alpha male warrior, but an alpha male with his leadership capabilities. But these young men are the exception rather than the rule these days. I'll ask you a question, Doug. It's been about a century when high schools around the United States began football programs. Why did they take the time and spend the money to have football teams in almost every high school in the country? Why do they do that, Doug? Can you answer me?
You know something? That's a great question. And the answer...
You don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer.
Well, you're about to find out.
You're going to tell me, aren't you?
It was not to entertain the rest of the students on Friday night. That was not the purpose. The purpose of high school football was to take soft city boys and turn them into tough young men. And that's what football does. It takes soft city dwelling young men and turns them into tough young men.
I agree.
That's what it does. Turns boys into men. And I was a football player, and I'll tell you, I'm a Vietnam vet. I was in special forces. I've jumped out of airplanes. I've been in combat. I've never done and probably never will do anything as physically and spiritually tough as summer football practice ever.
And the age is important too, right?
I mean, I wondered if I was even going to live through it, Doug. I mean, it's,
you know? Stand here and be the blocking dummy. But the age group in that scenario that you just described, that's very important because it builds character. It does.
And that's one of the problems with these large suburban school districts.
Yeah.
When a century ago, you didn't have high schools. At least if there are any, wasn't aware of them, high schools that had graduating class of 1,000-plus students. That was almost non-existent a century ago. What you had was many more smaller high schools where if a young man wanted to be a football player, that opportunity existed because the class wasn't so big that you had to, you know, you had no chance of playing football. I saw my grandson's school was a really large suburban school district in Seattle. He was a top athlete. In fact, he was going to be a professional football player, but they canceled the tryouts for the Canadian Football League when COVID started. And so he's doing quite well, and he's happy doing what he's doing. But when you have these large suburban and city school districts, it takes away many opportunities that would exist in a smaller high school where a graduating class is maybe 200 or 300 students instead of more than 1,000. Massive mistake, in my opinion. Massive mistake.
Well, you know, okay, so, and by the way, folks, you know, we are not just merely waxing nostalgic, okay? This is really the framework, in a sense. If you think about America, and John, you know, look, America in the 50s, I'll use that decade purposely. You know, look, I get the fact that it was not necessarily idyllic. If you look back at the 50s, for example, you can see the level of respect, the level of kindness, the level of reverence for God, even during that, at least by the rural Americans. So using that as the kind of the basis, but here we are today. Now let's get back to today's business. All right. So John, here's the thing. We started out. We showed that clip of video clip of people talking about camps for unvaxxed people. All right, over in I think it was New Zealand or Australia. It doesn't matter. Australia. All right. So now in America, where are we? Where has all of this gotten us to? This lack of respect, this lack of self, by the way, self-respect as well, because it's my view, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it's my view that if you don't respect and stand up for yourself, you will be run over by the leftist morons. I'm going to show you this. This is where we are today in many locations across the country. And people need to wake up, and I will say this as a statement. It is past time to attempt to wake up the sheep. We need to awaken the lions. Go ahead and play clip 5. Go ahead.
The COVID vaccine.
No, you need to come talk to me.
It's fine,
honey.
Listen carefully.
Mom.
Yeah, she just walked away from me.
It's the doctor's office.
The doctor?
Yeah. After they just diagnosed my son with an infection, they're refusing to give him medication. Is she not a doctor?
She's a nurse practitioner. You can leave now without your phone.
Excuse me.
That is part. I can confiscate it. Should I call 911?
You don't need to grab my stuff.
Then please walk out. Kathy, can you please call security?
So what you're telling me is my son has an infection.
Can you please call 911?
And you're unwilling to treat him?
What we've asked for. And now she's videotaping everything and is anonymously under my name.
Oh, I will. I will give this to whoever needs.
So, John, what that represented, folks, what this represents is a mom taking the son to a doctor's office. He was diagnosed with having an infection. The nurse, I don't know if it was a PA, the physician's assistant, or a nurse practitioner, or an RN. I'm not sure, but she was clearly at the head of this little office there saying, okay, well, yeah, you have an infection. It was diagnosed. You need some antibiotics, but you need to get the jab. And the mom's saying, well, wait, no. And her saying, well, then you're not going to get treated. And she walks away. This is what's happening in America today. It's starting slowly.
It's called coercion. Doug.
Yes.
That's coercion.
Well,
that's exactly what that is.
I mean, I've got a lot of words for it. Coercion is one, but I've got a lot worse words, but this is a family show, so I can't really say them. But you know what, John? So, again, you and I...
Well, it's clear violation of international law, what's called the Nuremberg Code.
Right.
It's a violation of international law to use threats or coercion to get somebody to accept any medication or medical treatment.
Right, exactly.
And that's right out of the 1947 Nuremberg Code, the Nuremberg Trials in Nuremberg, Germany. And people act like they don't know. I started talking about this in spring of 2020.
Yes, you
the
did.
Nuremberg Codes.
Yes.
At the time, maybe two or three people, others were, but I'm part of that generation that grew up knowing about the Nuremberg Code, the Nuremberg Trials, even though it happened when I was an infant. And it's like they never existed, Doug. It's like the Nuremberg Trials never took place. It's international law that it's a violation of international law to use force, threat, or coercion to get a person to accept any medical procedure or pharmaceutical product of any kind. And that's international law. And wake up and smell the coffee, people, because that's the way it is. And it's happening all over the country. Employers using threats and coercion to get their employees to accept a medication, it's a violation of international law. And now, there's many lawsuits.
Let me ask you, though, who litigates this? Who adjudicates this Nuremberg Code? It would be the head.
Here's what's it's already taking place.
Okay.
Unfortunately, with judicial system, not just ours, but judicial systems any place in the world, they take time. They take lots of time. You and I have spent most of our adult lives, Doug, dealing with these various court systems. In the U.S. state, local, state, and federal courts, everything moves forward in 30-day blocks of time. You make a motion, it takes 30 days for the opposition to respond to it, which means the current lawsuits, and there's dozens, maybe at this point hundreds of lawsuits, Doug, worldwide, not just the United States, that will take years to work their way through the courts, whether it's state or federal or even international. We don't have years. We got weeks. We got days to stop what's going on. That's the problem. Now, courts do have the ability, some courts anyway, to issue injunctions and stop activity, such as the clot shots. I don't anticipate that happening because I think much of the judiciary has been compromised, unfortunately. There may be some state judiciaries that have not, but I think much of the judiciaries have been at the state and federal level.
And that includes SCOTUS as well.
Unfortunately, yes. There could be some things where the compromised judges are ordered to do the right thing for the right reasons, because there are some things that even the powers that be can't tolerate. But that's a different topic for a different day. Which leads us on our own. I met with some friends I met with yesterday. The one gentleman, he's a engineer at Boeing Aircraft, has a lot of very serious obligations that he cannot afford to walk away from. He can't possibly earn an income anywhere near what he needs to if he seek other employment. And he's juggling, what do I do? Which of the clot shots will cause the least harm? That's where he is, because all Boeing employees, from the custodian to the CEO, are being mandated to get the clot shot in the next few weeks. It's a very near deadline.
Let me ask you, John, isn't that the wrong question to ask? Seriously, which will do less harm? Wait a second. You're telling me I've got to take this untested experimental jab juice. Okay, that's unconstitutional. You can't force it on me, but you are. You can't take my livelihood away from me, but you are. But see, here's, John, let me ask you again, isn't this the wrong question? Look, I feel for people like that. But I've turned down, without getting very specific, and I don't want to get specific, but I will in the future, I've turned down opportunities because I refuse to get the clot shot. No, I'm not going to do that. All right. As an investigator, a credentialed investigator, that has still has, you know, at least part part in that world. My question is, your friend, your acquaintance, that man, isn't that the wrong question to ask? Because shouldn't we be saying, wait a minute, what gives you the right to do this?
Well, he should. I'm sure he's asking those questions and doing what he can to avoid the clot shot. It's an individual choice, and I flippantly say you can always get another job, but you only got one life. When you're staring serious obligations in your face, it gets really tough.
My heart bleeds for. My heart hurts for people in that position, put in that position. But you know what would solve that? If every Boeing employee who had a reservation about it, or a definite no, I can't do this, or religious or conscious objection for it, if they all said no. I mean, look, but see, that this is not a bug. This is a feature. They want to destroy it. When you look at it through the lens of economic destruction to usher in a global currency, wouldn't this do it? I mean, you're crippling you're crippling Boeing, you're crippling the airlines, you're crippling the supply chain, you're crippling various industries. But it's by design. It's destruction by design, is it not?
It is. It is absolutely by design. Very little that's taking place here is happenstance.
Okay.
When it comes to the major things that you and I and our listeners are concerned about, almost none of it is happenstance. Almost all of it is contrived and planned. I do private consultations, Doug, and I had two consultation clients the weekend before last. They're both doctors. And he mentioned a patient who works for one of the major pharmaceutical companies that's making the clot shot, who told him confidentially, it took us 7 years to develop what people are getting right now. 7 years. Operation Warp Speed was just a cover story to conceal a vaccine that had been in development 7 years before the Operation Warp Speed even began. Now, that's the real deal, Doug.
And I want people to hear what you just said. I mean, John, it's so important for people to understand this because, among others, Chinese military scientists, not notice, Chinese military scientists, as well as some Anglo, scientists here from the States and from Canada, were working on a vaccine, but that's probably not the correct term, working on the mRNA technology. And the infrastructure, the AIDS/HIV infrastructure delivery system framework, whatever you want to call it, all the way back into the early aughts, if you will.
And oh, yes.
So what you just said is so critically important. And one thing before you continue, I just want to get this in here because if I don't, I'm going to forget about this. You saw the nurse, because I want to expand on what you're saying. You saw the nurse or the head of the doctor's office saying, no, we're not going to treat you. You didn't get jabbed. Get out of here. Get out of here. You know, you're second class. You're second tier. Okay, so those people who are attempting to take control of their health by finding a doctor, for example, who understands what's going on, who understands what you just said, saying, okay, this is the protocol my physician has told me to get, okay, whether it be ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, whatever the protocol is, in this case it's ivermectin, this is the response from, in my view, and I've known many pharmacists. I believe pharmacists have the most Napoleon-like complex on the planet. Why else would they, you know, be stationed, positioned about 6 feet off the ground on their own dais, if you will. And they wear the white lab coat. They didn't go to medical school. They're, you know, but watch this real quick and then we're going to get back to this, which you were talking about in terms of the development of the drug that is being pushed and injected in other people. But when you try to take control of yourself, your health, this is what happens. This is I believe it was a Walgreens. Go ahead.
If I'm a pharmacist here,
medication, I would reach out to your doctor's office if you're needing it.
It's something I've taken for
3 years. Yes, sir.
Okay,
yes, sir.
Well, then I'll
So I had a prescription for ivermectin to pick up and
walk.
I have a license. I have a doctor, licensed doctor that prescribed that to me.
We will not fill ivermectin for COVID. You
can that's against the law.
No, actually, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
You can call the Board of Pharmacy and call whoever you want to.
You have no right to get in between a patient and a doctor. You're not a doctor. You're a pharmacist.
Ivermectin is not authorized for COVID.
It's FDA approved, sir.
Not for COVID.
It doesn't have to be. It's an off-label product. Do you know what that means?
I do know what that means.
Okay, so then you should know better.
No.
Yes.
You need to research.
So, John, I mean, this is, so clearly this is not about health. This is about control. And what you said, so this was all in development a number of years before 2019. Or SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19, right? So here we are.
Well, Doug, there's an outfit called the National Institute for Health.
Yep.
And section 2E, 2 Echo, they list approved treatments for COVID-19. One of them is ivermectin. Right there at the website for the National Institute of Health, which is, pretty mainstream, I'd say, about as mainstream as something can get. And we got Don Lemon making fun of ivermectin as a horse dewormer, despite the fact that human beings have taken ivermectin for decades safely with it's about as safe as any prescription medication can be, quite frankly. I bought mine in summer of 2020, by the way, and I don't need it, but if I do need it, I got it. The obfuscation, the lies, making fun of things, which they've been doing for decades, in movies and TV shows and so forth. Humor is a great way to discredit anything, isn't it, Doug?
Yeah. And obviously, if you study communism as you have, John, as I have, it's interesting because the comedians, you can look this up, were among the first people to go and to be censored and then to be killed in communist nations or nations that succumbed to communism. Or allowed themselves to be succumb to communism. So humor, yes, it's a weapon for the truth in some cases. So there you have it. Yeah, you're right. So, but you know, it's interesting you point this out because the NIH website under Collins, Francis Collins, who was a big proponent of the vax, along with Edward Holmes and Fauci and Barrick and all those individuals. They just recently changed the website to show ivermectin as a potentially viable treatment. And the reason being, John, is because they developed their own ivermectin type medication that costs about $700 a pill, whereas ivermectin is about 70 cents a pill. And, you know, the big difference is what? Money. You're right. So there you go. You're right.
Of course it's money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no ivermectin is very inexpensive,
yeah.
Extremely inexpensive, and yeah, of course it's about money. That's simply the way it is. So,
and it's about control too. And I want to toss another clip in. I know we're kind of going quickly, but John, I want you to see this. It's about control too. This is out of Brevard County, Florida, John. You've got COVIDiots and maskholes, okay? So think about that. So you got people who are against science, like you've been talking forever. Masks just don't flip and work. But you've got these, for example, in Brevard County, this one teacher, I want you to see this. I want to get your reaction from this. This is a school board meeting in Brevard County. Now, remember, you speak up at school board meetings. You are a domestic terrorist, of course. We're going to be getting to that momentarily. But watch this clip, John, and because, again, you think it's about health. It's not about health. Your neighbor thinks it's about health. Stop watching CNN. Stop watching the networks. Listen to John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Listen to this platform. Listen to the people who know what they're talking about. Go ahead and play this clip. And these people, not the guy talking, but the the guy is talking about should be ashamed of themselves. And I got a feeling there's going to be some payback getting rolled out. Go ahead and play that clip.
When she got off the school bus a few days ago, her father saw her and she was wearing a mask. Now, in my school district, we have an illegal mask mandate, but she was wearing a mask, even though even under their own illegal mask mandates rules, she shouldn't have had to. But it wasn't enough that she was wearing a mask because she's a special needs nonverbal Down syndrome child who, by the way, 3 weeks earlier, the school district had called the parents and said, your daughter's taking her shoes off in school. Could you help us to make sure she keeps her shoes on? But they were willing to call about that. When her father saw her get off the school bus, she was wearing a mask and it was tied around her head with nylon rope. The mask was full of saliva. The girl couldn't breathe. Father's furious. How could they do that to my daughter today? So he went to the school and he talked to the school and he found out they didn't do it that day. They had tied this mask around her face every single day for the previous 6 weeks that she was in school. They just forgot to take it off that day before they sent her home. So when the parent said, what on earth were you thinking, to the teacher and to the principal, their answer was, the school board told us that our students all had to wear masks. There's a special place in hell for the three people who did this to this girl. This girl experienced real child abuse at the hands of the Brevard County School Board. And I will tell you this, this session, there's going to be hell to pay for the people who did that. Seeing no further business, Vice Chair.
But a bing, but a bang, there's going to be hell to pay. And John, this is about control. It's not about your health. These are mask holes. You know what I'm talking about, folks. These are people who have this Nazi-esque kind of attitude where it's my way or the highway. It's steeped in insanity. It really is. Or narcissism or psychopathy or something. It's a mass delusion. John, but now Americans are, I hope Americans are going to be starting to fight back, but that's unconscionable what they did to that young girl.
It is. Well, it brings up a whole list of new questions. Now this is Florida, Brevard County.
Brevard County, Florida. And this, to his credit, this guy, part of the school board.
Was this a state rep?
No. This is a member of the school board saying, hey, wait a second.
Oh, he was a member of the Brevard County School Board?
It's my understanding. Let me just triple check. Really? Yeah. It's saying, look, you guys, let me just see here. Was it a school board member or, and folks, this is on Twitter. The link will be in the program description box. But I believe he was a member of the school board. I could be wrong, but in other words, whatever, this guy was not, obviously was not in agreement with any of this. And of course, you know, in this environment, it's a majority rules. So, but this was taken to the extreme. You've got child abuse by people who have this complex where they've got to control everybody, and it's not sufficient that you wear a mask. No, you're going to wear, everyone's going to wear a mask. I mean, we're going to tie. There's a picture of the little girl. God bless that little girl. My heart goes out to that little girl. We are raising the terror, the fear, the lack of socialization, the lack of being able to see other people's faces is creating a generation of really transhumans, not in the technological sense, but in the social sense. I mean, imagine doing that to this little girl. I will tell you this, John, and for those listening, I don't care what you say. I would go and I would find those people. If that was my daughter, I would find those people responsible and I would beat the hell out of those people. I mean, I would lay them out. I would make sure that they would seriously require hospitalization if that was my daughter or my granddaughter. End of story. Because these people are sick. There it is.
Well, and not to mention, those among us with Down syndrome, they also have enlarged tongues.
Yep.
So it's very difficult for them to breathe, let alone.
Thank you, Eric the Tech. Yes, I thank you. You're right. John, that's why people, and here's the thing, in closing, John, and I'll kick it to you because I'm fired up. All right, this is happening across the country. And you know something, John? I hope this isn't the case, but mamas and grandmas are going to become the force to be reckoned with, which is why Merrick Garland, you know, is critical race theory, the Marxist rooted. What is critical race theory? It's a Marxist program. It's Marxist. It is communist for the love of everything. And his son and his daughter-in-law are benefiting financially from critical race theory. But this case, okay, so Merrick Garland, not to outdo himself on that, is saying, hey, you speak out at the school board hearings, you're the domestic terrorist. We are going to put you on the most wanted list, which we'll get into. But see, this is happening in America today. And I'll tell you what, John, I know you and I know me. I know me better than you. But anyway, I wouldn't put up with that. If I saw my granddaughter coming back with a mask, nylon rope tied around her face, I'd take that rope and I would repurpose it, if you know what I mean.
If I walked into that school and saw my granddaughter in that condition, I would take immediate action, and it would not have a pleasant ending for the people who were responsible for it. If I went to jail, hey, I'm okay with that because it'd be worth it.
You know, guys like you and I, right? See, you get to a certain age, and I'm talking to younger folks, life in prison, there's less of a meaning to it the older you get. Okay. I'm telling you. This is me. But you know, I know you, John. You wouldn't put up with that. I don't put up with this. But Americans are not going to put up with this. I love the people of Australia. I really do. We have so many great listeners over there. UK as well. But man up. Man up. Let's all man up. And woman up, or whatever you want to call it. But let's say, you know what? You're not going to do this to my children, my grandchildren. You're not going to do this to my the people I love. And how dare you? I want to follow up on the story and see what kind of hell they're going to pay, because they should be charged criminally. If not.
Absolutely.
If not, that's, taken up to the woodshed.
That's clearly criminal act to do that to anybody, an adult or a child. There's all kinds of questions. Many of these larger school districts, majority of them, have special schools for students that have special needs instead of having them with the students who don't have special needs, which is the proper way to handle that. And I don't know why she would be with. And a friend of mine, she does some child care for a large suburban school district, and they're now mainstreaming children with autism and those kinds of special needs in the regular schools instead of having them where they should be in the special needs schools. That's another whole topic, Doug, and I really don't know why that's going on. Why do we spend the money to build special school districts and then put the special needs children in with the children who don't have those requirements? That's beyond me. It's some kind of political correctness stuff, I guess, going on. That's wrong. And I would think in Florida that would not be happening. Some other states, California, New York, I would expect that, more than I would Florida. Governor DeSantis, by the way, is supporting legislation that would offer $5,000 to police officers who are leaving Chicago because of the COVID mandates to relocate, become a police officer in Florida.
Yeah.
I'd like to see legislation passed, and hundreds, maybe thousands of Chicago police officers move to sunny Florida and start a new career as a police officer in Florida. Wouldn't that be great? The $5,000 would help carry, cover the moving expense and all the trials and tribulations of moving from 1,000 plus miles. Wouldn't that be great, Doug, to see that happen?
Yes, and let the lesbionic chia pet of a mayor, Lightfoot, appropriate name, by the way, let her reap, or yeah, reap what she sowed. Because as we all know, Chicago, that really is kind of the model of law and order there in Chicago. Or San Francisco, or wherever. You're right, though. You know, I would like to see, let's solve these problems like that. That's a great idea. Hey, sign-on bonus, come on down here. And you know something, though? John, let me ask you this. Do you think maybe that what is happening, is this going to pit the red states against the blue states or vice versa more than they already are? Is that going to happen?
Of course it will. Of course it will. Offering $5,000 sign-up bonus to leave. I don't know if you've ever been downtown Chicago in the wintertime. They call the wind the hawk in downtown Chicago. I was there New Year's Eve. I think it was about 1978. Whoa, Doug, I'll tell you, when you breathe, you take in a lungful of air and those little hairs in your nostrils instantly freeze. Yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah.
To go to Florida? Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Yeah, and if you've ever, and if you're involved in law enforcement in Chicago, it's not the, it's not a day at the beach. Let me tell you, like, I got to ride with a police officer down in, Daytona Beach just for a couple of hours. No, I wasn't in the back, Eric. No, I was not in the back in handcuffs. It wasn't spring break. But you know what? It's a whole different environment, down there. So anyway, to get back what you're saying, yeah, brother, we're in a world of hurt nationally as a nation.
Well, I'll get back to your question a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Conflict between red states and blue states is inevitable. Make-believe President Biden is ready to activate, I think, the National Guard to get the goods moving in California ports. That's only part of the problem. The state legislator in California has caused, I believe, 100,000 truckers to leave California. So even if ships are offloaded,
please drive that home. I mean,
what's next?
Yes.
The container, these 20 and 40 foot connexes are offloaded. What's next? I guess a certain percentage will be loaded on the trains. If they have, railroad siding there, but probably half, I don't know the percentage, but a good percentage of all those connexes that will be going to the lower, the other 47 lower states. They would move by truck. And there's a mandate in California, I think it's maybe 4 to 5 years in the future, that only semi-tractors with electric motors can be sold in California, which is a $70,000 increase over and above the already expensive price for a semi-tractor to pull these semi-trailers.
They're going to need a lot longer extension cords in California.
Roger that. Well, they're going to leave.
Yeah, of course.
If you can't make a living driving these trucks at these trucking companies, they're simply gonna, and they're already doing it. They're already leaving. I believe that the governor of California, Governor Newsom, is compromised by the communists in some way. My understanding is California has already opened the equivalent of a embassy in China. Looking toward the time when California will once again be a freestanding republic separate from the United States with this embassy in China. I guess it's in Peking, Beijing, whatever they call it, city now.
What you just said, wouldn't it be easier or more appropriate by way of the Constitution? Instead of pitting the states, the red versus blue states, against one another, like California, for example, and you mentioned, you know, the embassy situation, In my view, here's what I think should happen. We shouldn't get a divorce or separate, you know, the nation along party lines. We should get a divorce from those people running these states into the ground or overtaking them by communist measures, by active measures, communist. So in other words, it's not the states that are the problem. It's the people running the states. And I believe that they should be brought before some sort of body and tried, charged and tried. Because this is crazy. How can you do this to the United States of America? We're not united.
I agree with you, Doug, on one hand. On the other, we need a honest, patriotic FBI and honest, patriotic Department of Justice to do what you suggested, and we don't have either one. That's a big problem.
You know, speaking of that, I'm so glad you spoke of that. We don't have a Justice Department that's... Our Justice Department is the Department of Injustice. Otherwise, we wouldn't have patriots rotting away in a Washington D.C. jail, solitary for 23 hours a day, not charged. Okay, over a bullcrap, quote insurrection. Nancy Pelosi and all of her D and F. Well, you get the idea. I'm going to take you and everyone, since you mentioned this, let's go to Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland was questioned recently. And this is clip 8. Merrick Garland was questioned about, I think I might have screwed that up, clip 8. Do you have clip 8 there? Or did that redirect to a page? Okay. I'm talking to Eric the Tech here. Okay, so if you scroll down a little bit, there is Thomas Massie questioning Attorney General Merrick Garland about whether there were federal agents in the present on 1/6. And the reason I'm bringing this in is because Merrick Garland was questioned about his son being involved in the critical race theory curricula. All right, so wait a minute. So he refused. He said no. You know, the FBI deployment to the local police agencies, that had nothing to do with it. He stonewalled the question so much. So you take that and John, because what you just said, take that and let's apply it to 1/6. Let's apply it to the current state of the Justice Department. Okay. Here's Thomas Massie, Representative Thomas Massie questioning Attorney General Garland. And this goes to what you said about the Department of Justice, because I remember the Department of Justice back in the 90s. It wasn't this bad. Now it's a fully weaponized agency against the American public. Watch this, John.
There's a concern that there were agents of the government or assets of the government present on January 5th and January 6th during the protests. And I've got some pictures that I want to show you, if the my staff could bring those to you. I'm afraid I can't see that at all.
I would put that right underneath his nose. Personally.
Is that a approved video? All right, you have those images there, and they're captioned. They were from January 5th and January 6th. As far as we can determine, the individual who was saying he'll probably go to jail, he'll probably be arrested, but they need to go into the Capitol the next day, is then the next day directing people to the Capitol. And as far as we can find, this individual has not been charged with anything. You said this is one of the most sweeping investigations in the history. Have you seen that video or those frames from that video?
So as I said at the outset, one of the norms of the Justice Department is to not comment on impending investigations, and particularly not to comment about particular scenes or particular individuals.
I was hoping today to give you an opportunity to put to rest the concerns that people have that there were federal agents or assets of the federal government present on January 5th and January 6th. Can you tell us, without talking about particular incidents or particular videos, how many agents or assets of the federal government were present on January 6th, whether they agitated to go into the Capitol, and if any of them did?
So I'm not going to violate this norm of the rule of law. I'm not going to comment on an investigation that's ongoing.
All right. There it is. John, so to what you said about the Department of Justice, the FBI, all right, this is a bunch of bull crap. When you've got the FBI, you've got the Department of Justice actively recruiting, just like we opened with the Whitmer plot, where you've got federal agents tripping all over themselves. We've seen this in chat rooms and such, you know, to spur the Islamic Muslim terrorists in order to, hey, deliver this bomb over there to the federal building. Okay, let's do it. Yeah, okay. And every time you turn around, you run into a Fed. This is what's happening. All right. Now, it's a clunky segue. I get it. But see, this strikes at the heart of the takeover of our republic. This is what's happening. They've weaponized the Department of Justice. They've weaponized the FBI. They've said John Moore, Doug Hagman, Eric the Tech, and you folks who are watching and listening, you are enemies of the state. This is where we're at now. So the lines are clear, John. We're enemies of the state. We are domestic terrorists now. And you know what comes next? The camps, like we showed. You know what comes next? Going into the DC prison and not having legal representation, and no one who's coming to their aid? Who is coming to their aid? Have we seen anyone come to their aid? No. They're sitting there. What was their crime? They walked through the Capitol. I'm not talking about the people who busted things up. I'm talking about the people who walked through the velvet rope there and were let in. Who were they let in by? It was a freaking setup. By the Department of Justice, by the very moron, the Muppet, that was sitting there giving congressional testimony. By not answering that question, he answered that question. John, to you.
Well Doug, if I was to get off wrap up the show with you today, walk into a local bank with a ski mask on and rob it and be arrested 10 minutes later, I would be brought before a magistrate. The charges would be read to me. And there would be a bond hearing, and I would be a certain dollar amount. If nobody was hurt, no weapon was used, there would be a dollar amount bond set that would probably be something that I could meet, and I would be released pending trial.
So, wait, what's the purpose of a bond? What's the purpose of a bond?
The purpose of the bond is to guarantee you show up for the next hearing.
Bada-bing, bada-bang.
The bond.
Bingo.
Men and women charged with serious crimes, pretty violent crimes, even murder. Typically in my neighborhood, it's a $1 million bond for first-degree murder. So the dollar amount of the bond is dependent upon two things, the seriousness of the crime and the likelihood of that person who's charged with the crime to either be a threat to themselves or the general public or to not show up for court. So depending on those three factors, the nature of the crime, the potential for violence, and the likelihood of the person to show up for court, the dollar amount of the bond will be set, and the person has the opportunity to make that bond or remain staying in jail until the next hearing. Why hasn't it been done for all these men, I assume some women, I don't know, that are locked up in D.C. for what amounts to a nonviolent property crime of trespassing? A nonviolent property crime of trespassing, which typically you don't even have to post bond for. Typically, it's about the same as getting a speeding ticket. In most jurisdictions, most of the time, a nonviolent trespassing, if there's no violence, no threats made, the officer will issue you a citation, equivalent of a speeding ticket, and you have to appear in a court 30 days later. Why hasn't that been done in this case, Doug? What's this? And solitary confinement is what they do to harden criminals in the toughest prisons, not only in the United States, but worldwide. It's the worst punishment, other than, obviously torture. But it's the worst punishment you can do to a man or a woman is to put them in solitary confinement. That's done to punish people who have committed crimes in prison. Prisoners who commit crimes in prison, they get the solitary confinement. Why is that being done here, Doug? There's no explanation for that, and there can't be an explanation for it. There can't be.
You know, yes, I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. And, you know, it's...
Let me emphasize it. Sure. A murderer, a man who's been convicted on videotape evidence of committing first-degree murder, if he commits a crime in jail, this convicted murderer who's going to spend the rest of his life in jail, that's the guy who gets solitary confinement. That's how serious solitary confinement is, Doug.
Yes.
That's as serious as it gets.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, okay, so you're 100% right. And folks, John Moore, the Liberty Man, experienced investigator, homicide investigator, just a well-rounded experience in a number of areas, including military. So he knows that of which he speaks. Go to thelibertyman.com and bookmark that website, thelibertyman.com. And of course, he's got his own radio show as well. He's kind enough to spend some time with me, and I appreciate that very much. I really do. I appreciate John Moore a lot. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Please, folks, do that and listen to John. But John, to what you in this case, okay, America has been captured from within. We are a captured operation. The Justice Department has been weaponized. The monetary system has been overtaken by globalist interests. The healthcare industry has been subjected to and succumbed to Obamacare, which is a nationalizing of the healthcare system. The police departments have been defanged, dethroned. Look, I'm not in favor of cops going out there and enforcing mask mandates, but I am in favor of law and order, and I appreciate the fact that they do have a job to do, and they do it well, except for those thugs who don't do it well. But in this case here, Revolver just came out with this story. Why? You ask why? It is, to me, it's a representative of a bigger problem, because what we're talking about here is everyone saying this was an insurrection on 1-6. And you might say, people might say, well, this doesn't really have anything to do with what we've been talking about all show. Yes, it does. The country was taken over. We had a coup, unlike 63, you know, but the end result was the same. We had a coup on November 3rd last. And of course, again on January 20th, it was not on the 1-6. So Revolver Darren Beatty had this wonderful expose investigative report showing who was behind the 1-6 Capitol uprising. It wasn't an insurrection. It was the very agency that was weaponized against patriots. And this is what I'm talking about, because John, you have, in your part of the country, you are close to the militia. I'm not saying, the militia, of course, being a legitimate organization. You are close to patriots. But you know something? Who do you trust? Who can you trust when you've got feds tripping over themselves to compromise a patriotic endeavor? We have jumped the shark in TV parlance. And we jumped it a long time ago. John, this is representative. This represents everything that, the fact that our country has been overtaken and we are a captured operation. And you know what? As a hostage, there's only one way I can think of getting out as a hostage, and it ain't going to be pretty. So I don't know what to say, but more to say. But by the way, so January 6th, I just want to, Darren Beatty from Revolver, revolver.news, read the article. The link's in the program description box. This Ray Epps. And by the way, all right, it's an indictment. The investigation in this is an indictment. And let's just say you might want to take a look at, and I've met this man. I've broken bread with this man. I've had coffee with this man, Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers. Look, I'm going to call it like I see it. Okay, I got a really bad feeling about some of these patriotic organizations that are working hand in glove with the feds who want to jail us all. And, you know, Just saying. Facts speak for themselves. You know what? Hey, Stuart, come on. Hey, Stuart, you know me, Stuart Rhodes. I've talked to you on the phone. I've talked to you off air. You come to the studio. You sit down. Let's discuss this.
He's not going to do that, Doug.
No, of course
Sam,
not.
Sam Manders can give you an earful of Stuart Rhodes.
I know.
I met Stuart at a conference in Dallas and talked to him at length. I didn't know what I know now. He certainly comes across to somebody who doesn't know any better as being a hardcore patriot, but he's far from it and not to be trusted. But the feds have been doing similar operations. Doug, you probably remember when the American Indians took over the little settlement called Wounded Knee in South Dakota in the winter of 72-73.
Oh, yeah.
The American Indian in charge of security inside Wounded Knee was an FBI operative.
The hell you say?
Oh yeah, that's well known. Oh yeah, this has been going on for decades.
Yeah,
nothing new.
It has. So, you know, which brings me to the point here. Okay, so, and we've got about 10 minutes left of the show, and I'm sorry for dominating so much, but that's just me. So, no, I'm not sorry, because you know.
You're doing a good job, Doug.
All right, so two more things real quick. All right. Now, combine everything you just heard, the clot shots, the bioweapon, response to all of this, the shutdown of our economy, all of this stuff. Now, you know, as if that's not bad enough by the globalists, you know, asking us to grab our ankles and, assume the position, so to speak. If that's not bad enough, clip 7. Now, this is, we don't have to go through the entire clip. Clip 7. John, the southern border, aside from Kamala heels up Harris, aside from her picture being in a milk carton, you know, for missing, southern border. Okay. By the way, 50 to 80,000 Haitians and others from Central America. You're looking at an invasion force down there. Watch this real quick, and we don't have to play the whole thing, but this is a report about what's going on the border. As if everything else you heard wasn't enough, now the globalists say, hey, they don't need a southern border. This a very quick interview with a guy from Buffalo, New York, former ICE or Border Patrol agent. Go ahead, run that.
A new massive organized caravan of migrants storming through a blockade of Mexican security forces. Look at that, as they make their way north toward the United States. Thomas Feely is a former ICE field office director for Buffalo, New York, and he joins us now to react. Good morning to you, Thomas.
Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing well. This doesn't surprise you, does it? We don't expect them to follow the law.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, as long as the door remains open, they'll continue to come. And what's really shocking about this caravan is they're already demonstrating that they don't obey the laws of where they're currently at. So there's no expectation that they'll obey our laws when they get here.
What happens when they do get here?
Well, the only response that I'm aware of by DHS is to detail people to the border from ICE and CBP, but they're not there to stop it or close the border or do any type of law enforcement action. They're only there to help process these people and get them into the country quicker. So I don't know what DHS is doing. I don't know where our vice president is, but obviously an open border is what they wanted, and it's mm-hmm. an open border is what they got.
They're seeking asylum.
The entire clip will be at HagmanReport.com. But John, so now we got that to contend with. We've got this open door, and we'll send ICE agents and Border Patrol agents down there. Morale, by the way, is out the door. I've talked to a couple of agents who don't want to come on the air. They said, you know what? I'll go work at Wendy's. Seriously, I'll go work at Wendy's rather than do this. So, you know, again, by design, destruction by design. Go ahead.
It is. Well, to be a sovereign state, one of the basic fundamentals of any sovereign state is defined, recognized, defended borders. In the absence of that, you don't have a sovereign state. It doesn't matter whether it's Liechtenstein or the Vatican or Russia or China, United States. You have to have defined, recognized, defended borders to be recognized as a sovereign state. We're at the cusp of no longer being a sovereign state. That's the goal, is to eliminate our country as being a sovereign state with recognized, defined, defended borders. But we've known for years that there's been radio announcements in these Central and South American countries encouraging people to come north. Who's paying for that? That's my question. Who's paying for that, Doug? These people aren't just wake up one morning and decide to do this. There's organized and financed operations to get these people to move north in the first place. They don't just dream it up on their own.
And in that clip, which wasn't, we didn't show, there are signs saying Joe Biden, you know, welcomes all. And this was, okay, so this is a globalist operation, but your question, who's paying for this? Who is funding these operations? NGOs, Catholic Charity, you've got the Benedictines, you've got these Soros-alike and Soros destruction wrecking balls of shell companies. Follow the money. I followed a group of illegals, children from McAllen to my hometown of Erie, and it was a stopping point for a while. And I got to tell you, it was all Catholic charities. It was all these NGOs, and these children disappeared into the American ether. Okay, they were let go, but that's just one instance. But you know, these are fighting age military men. And John, I got a feeling we are all going to be on the front lines. Every town is going to be a border town. Every city is going to be yet, you know, Mr. Marbles over there, Biden, just like, Psaki, the, P is silent in president. But that guy, that stooge of the Communist Chinese Party, he has taxpayers. You and I paid $455,000 in order for him to have a fence put around his Delaware property. Well, apparently walls and fences work, don't they? But this is destruction by design. So, sorry about that. I got carried away. We have about 5 minutes. What's that? 4 minutes. 4 minutes, he said.
4 minutes.
4 minutes. So, yeah, you can take it.
Okay, Doug. Well, the most important thing a person can do is get their spiritual house in order. That is not optional. You need skills. What's coming at us, there's no historical record that we're aware of where this has happened worldwide. The consequences of the clot shot worldwide. I just read a headline just a moment ago. Pfizer prepared 3 billion with a B COVID clot shots this year, this calendar year, 2021. They're preparing to manufacture 4 billion with a B the next 12 months in 2022. Now, that's basically enough for almost every man, woman, and child on the planet to get their very own clot shot, not even counting Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and others that aren't even released in this country. So that's the plan. The plan is to kill off the population of the planet. Don't get the clot shot. Don't do it. Get the skills. You want ham radio skills. You want first aid and CPR skills. You need a safe haven away from these cities where you can grow food, have water, and be safe. That's what's coming, Doug. It's going to be brutal. It'll be gruesome. And we will get through this. It won't be pleasant, however. Not everybody, obviously. Many millions of people are not going to make it. There's going to be a remnant. The people who don't get the clot shot, who've made preparations in advance, my consultation clients, for example, they're going to survive this because they've made preparations in advance. It's not too late to do so, by the way. Not too late at all. But every day you wait is a day lost. So I encourage people to get their safe haven, get their skills, get their needs that they need to store up, and get their spiritual house in order. Make it a daily event to spend some time with our Lord Jesus in thoughtful prayer. That needs to happen. It needs to happen right now. We know from the World War II experience that the men and women who had a strong spiritual foundation going to the camps, POW camps, concentration camps, they had a much more likely, better outcome than the ones who did not. And so the time to do that is now, Doug. We're almost out of time.
Amen. And you know what? I don't have time to wake up the sheep anymore. Let's wake up the lions among us. John Moore is a lion as well. John, God bless you, my friend. Thank you for being part of the program.
Thank you, Derek.
All right. Folks, that'll do it for me tonight. May God bless each and every one of you. May God richly bless you and keep you safe today and in the days ahead. Again, we need to speak to and wake up the lions, not the sheep. I can't even keep track of my own program clock. Okay. Folks, if you haven't done so already, please go to the satellite phone store and grab yourself a satellite phone and also Galileo. I'm putting alerts out on Galileo. We're talking human intelligence, human sources. I just posted something here recently where in the middle of the country, there's a couple of clinics that are experiencing shortages of antibiotics, other medications, some disposable medical equipment. You need to know this. Shortages are headed your way. Become a member or a user of Galileo and get your satellite phone from the satellite phone store and tell them Doug Hagman sent you. Hey, God bless. Good night, everyone. We'll be right back.